and all, once again to a very special episode of Dual Wielding. It's our 2013 Game of the Year Award season, and joining us this week, we have a full house. We have Jason.
Howdy.
We have Martin.
Hello.
We have Daniel.
Guten Tag.
We have Anthony.
I went to bed at 6 a.m. this morning.
Why?
And I woke up at 7. I was working all last night on something for a presentation this morning. Presentation went well. I'm
well,
tired.
Yes, you should go take a nap.
I will, believe me.
After you're done with this. So yes, we have a fun build. We have a fun full set of awards to give out, and we're just going to try to run through these as best as possible. This year, we have nominees, and we're going to announce the winner after that. And hopefully somebody who picked it as their game will discuss it. To kick it off, this is my personal favorite award of the year just because of what year it was. But the Year of Luigi, Game of Luigi. The nominees were Luigi's Mansion, Dark Moon, New Super Luigi U, Dr. Luigi, and Mario and Luigi Dream Team's Bro, just because I like to throw in there. And of course, obviously to most people, Luigi's Mansion 2 won hands down. Does anybody want to share their thoughts on that game?
I think Luigi's Mansion 2 is... It kind of surprised me. I mean, the first game didn't blow me away back in the day on the GameCube. And this game kind of improved a lot on the formula and, for me, made Luigi's Mansion great and probably what it should have been in the first place.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, and I think it took everything that was great about the original. There was some great stuff. It was rough around the edges.
Overall great, that's what I meant.
Yeah, but
it was
yeah.
good, but not great.
Yeah,
it was great for what it was, and then it took forever to never... And I guess it was too short. It never really got going.
Yeah.
And this game just kind of fleshes that all out. It's sad that it took 10 years to make, but we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah, it also switches up a lot of stuff and tries to come up with clever things from level to level. That's also another thing that actually has levels, unlike the original.
Which I think can go either way for some people, because I do prefer the original's kind of... single mansion structure, but this way it was a much better portable game because you could break up the action into chunks that you
Agreed.
Could finish. Yeah, and that's
it. Also, just John.
No, go on.
I was like the thing that is nice about Luigi's Mansion. I think the appeal of it is that it takes the appeal of a point and click adventure game and brings it in. It brings puzzles in there and also brings some good action because, I mean, even playing the game a few months later, it's still just as satisfying to suck up ghosts. And if you guys haven't tried it yet, I forget the exact name of the mode, but the tower mode, the multiplayer tower mode, where you cooperatively go up through the tower and clear out the ghosts on each level, that's actually a lot of fun as far as co-op goes. And you can do it single card and online.
That's true. I was also surprised how good the multiplayer mode was.
Yeah, and that it was online, because it is a Nintendo game.
Yep.
Even though their Western studios tend to do a good job of actually including that in their game. But moving on, because we have a lot of awards to get through. This one, apparently, you all had different options for, but Best Character of 2013. The nominees were Wonder Blue from The Wonderful 101, Elizabeth from Bioshock Infinite, Rex Coat, I think, from Blood Dragon?
Yes.
Luigi, because it was his year and he was in a ton of games. And, I don't even know how to pronounce this one. Martin,
Yorgi Kostava from Papers, Please.
Yes, because that's what you need to say. So we actually don't have a clear winner, so we're going to have to determine that on air. So who wants to make a case for their character?
Michael Biehn, and you press a button and you flip people off, and you get to shoot a... dragons that shoot lasers out of their eyes. I don't see what's
not to have about
what's not to like about Rex Colt.
I can go for Michael Biehn. I like Michael
Biehn.
Yeah,
Michael Biehn.
Michael Biehn is cool. I mean, Yorgi Kostava...
I don't know if he stands up to Blue's Valamantium blade.
I mean, Yorgi Kostava is
a pretty
funny character
blade? Yeah.
Papers, Please, but he probably doesn't fly out of context. And I think I would probably go with Daniel's pick because that character just works. You just see some dialogue or some brief footage with this character and it's pretty cool or funny.
Yes, yes. So just for the bravery's sake, we're going to go with Rex Colt here. Just because I also have to throw up the 80s action movies, which is a huge part of my life.
Yeah.
Worst characters, I'm not going to give an award to, we're just going to name the two people. Colonel Loomis from Gears of War Judgment, and Keith David, from the president from Saints Row 4.
Yes.
So, yeah, there you go. Franchise revival. This was an interesting one. It was a decent year. We had The Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, Tomb Raider, Shadowrun Returns, and Luigi's Mansion. And not to anybody's surprise, because it is this year, Luigi's Mansion picks that up.
We all
just kind of mentioned it before. It's just a game that took everything that was good about the original, expanded on it, made it much better, included a actual working multiplayer that was fun and unique. And I think of these games, it was the closest to an actual revival. I mean, I get it between worlds, but we did get a Zelda game like 2 years
yeah,
ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that a revival personally.
And we got it.
The reason I put that is that it's a revival of the 2D top down Zelda.
But we
I don't think that's ever gone away,
yes.
Though. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's not exactly the same, but
it's been like 5 years.
I wouldn't even consider those because they were unplayable for me because of their touch control and it wasn't Minish Cap, it wasn't Oracle, it wasn't that style of game. And so to come back to an actual 2D D-pad and buttons, I hadn't had that since Game Boy Advance. Unless you count Four Swords, which is I would consider that almost a franchise of its own. But I mean, I guess it's just how you look in the word franchise. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing with Tomb Raider, because I think we just had one in, 2000?
Yeah, but it is
a
reboot, so yeah. I would think it counts.
Either way, Luigi won. Check out Luigi's Mansion. Fantastic game. This is just an evil, evil award, because it was a year full of them, but worst prequel of 2013.
Or most unnecessary game in a gaming franchise.
We had God of War Ascension, Gears of War Judgment, The Last Planet 3, and to a much lesser extent, Batman Arkham Origins and Assassin's Creed 4. I think the last two were actually good games in their own right. I do think Arkham Origins might have been unnecessary, but it was a good game. The other three were just kind of eh. And, nobody's great surprise. Gears of War Judgment 1. I think partially.
See, the thing is, with all those lists, like, well, a lot were underwhelming. Gears of War was actually actively a bad game. Where the others were just not as good as the games that were prequels to.
Yeah. Well, I think Last Planet, none of us actually played. I still don't remember when it came out.
I actually heard it's not bad, it's just totally mediocre.
Lost Planet 3's problem is it's not EX Troopers.
Whatever.
That as well. I would love to play EX Troopers. I played the demo on PS3. Man, that game is so good.
Why didn't it come out on PS3? Like, I understand the DS being reached.
It's Capcom, and apparently they were as so clever to do all the text bubbles as image files with all the Japanese text in them.
I think Capcom's main reason was, we're already making a game that you want, and that's Lost Planet 3.
No, the excuse was actually the translation would be wasted because of that.
Oh, that's their problem then.
They were dumb and made images with text in them.
That's terrible.
I don't know what they were thinking.
I don't know. I mean, half the time I don't know what they're thinking, especially after this past week of interviews, but we'll talk about that at another time. This is an award, not an award, I guess, but everybody goes around the table and gets to share their own. Your biggest disappointment of 2013... Jason, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. Mine had to be Battlefield 4's technical issues.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of all the games, I think it was... What's that?
Because it spilled into 2014?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're ongoing. And it's just... It's so disappointing because Battlefield 3 had a troublesome launch, and you'd think, and you know, over the summer, I specifically remember EA's new CEO Andrew Wilson talking about how they learned from all these like launch debacles, like Sin City and Battlefield, and pretty much every single game they've had that's gone online. And then freaking Battlefield 4 comes out, and it's the biggest stinking pile of shit of all of them. Just
broken on five systems.
Just it's yeah, across every single platform, it's just completely unstable. Just connection issues, bugs, deleting campaign saves, which personally happened to me 3 times, and I was so pissed. And the last time was after they supposedly patched it too.
You know how I got around that? After every session, I copied my save file to a USB stick.
Yeah, I should have. The thing is, I did. I'm playing on PS4, so I had it upload to the cloud, but I didn't disable auto upload, so it uploaded the one that got overridden afterward. And I was like, God damn it! The biggest part of the most disappointing part is the game is actually very good and beautiful and a great next generation showcase on PS4 when it's working. And it's such a huge caveat that, you know, like, as a product, it should just not have come to market in that state. And it's just awful. So that's my biggest disappointment.
Okay. Martin, you are up.
Mine is the rise of microtransaction for retail titles. And that
which is also
mine. Yeah, we share that, and it's mostly, I think, we saw it in some titles earlier, like last year Assassin's Creed already had those, but it really showed its ugly head when the Xbox One launched, and like all the Microsoft first party titles had were filled with it and had like hooks in all the menus for it and stuff, and that's just disgusting and really shouldn't be there.
Yeah, I think
not
that was
for
my biggest
titles you played $20 to $60 for.
I think that was my biggest issue too, is like third parties I can kind of understand, I didn't accept it, but when it started popping up in first party titles is when it became really just kind of like, then you're not really safe. I mean, I think Gran Turismo 6 also has it, but not to as great an extent.
It's not like, I think it's not pushed in the menus, like in Forza and stuff.
But yeah,
I'm not quite sure.
But it's there, and it's just kind of like, it's a way to, like, again, the whole point of our free-to-play model is that it's free to enter, not $60, and then pay us a lot of money to actually get the experience you paid for originally.
Yeah.
And what's happened with a lot of these games, from what I've heard, is that a lot of the game design is suffering from it because it's becoming this huge chore. They're just making it so that the grind to get anything is just this massive wall to overcome. So
it's especially obvious with Forza, where people immediately realize that the progression changed from the previous games. And, I mean, Turn 10 actually reacted to that. I don't think they did that very well. But they recognized that people were really not happy with what they were doing.
Yeah. Daniel, what is yours?
Aliens, Colonial Marines, because, like, Gearbox can make good games. They can do it, and they can do them very well. Just for some reason, Randy Pitchford got involved, and he decided to release things that weren't true and make claims about the game that were lies, and
isn't actually half the game not even developed by Gearbox?
Time Gate or something? Time Gate, and it's, it could have been good. It should have been good. But Randy Pitchford pretty much did everything that he could have done to make sure that that didn't happen. And you know what? I'm not even a fan of the Aliens franchise. I just like that kind of game that it could have been, and no.
Well, you get excited for a new one next year. Or this year.
I'm not going to do it.
All right.
Not doing it.
I think it looks alright. Could be cool.
I'm going to wait until like a month after reviews come out for that game before I even consider buying it.
Which is fair.
Yeah, I wouldn't jump in right away. That's true.
Anthony, what is your most disappointing thing of 2013.
Well, yeah, I mean, you guys are complaining about stuff, but I think everyone's forgotten the year of Luigi's over.
Well, technically, it has been expanded.
The fiscal year of Luigi goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, no, it doesn't. I mean, as much as I want that to be true, too, like, everyone knows that one of the five stages of grieving is denial, and Nintendo's right in the thick of it.
If you want to see denial, we'll see the Wii U sales.
Yes, that's if I'm being serious, it's how Nintendo still hasn't picked itself up by its bootstraps and made the system into something that is taken seriously. They have right now. I honestly still do think that the Wii U is the best out of three out there, just because a year ahead they have some good exclusive titles as opposed to the launch software, the PS4 and the Xbox One. You have Wind Waker HD, you have the Super Mario 3D World, you have the Wonderful 101, Pikmin 3, Rayman 3 can get on the others, but it's great on Wii U as well. And they have some compelling eShop titles as well, but with every story that you see about, oh, they're not bringing such and such to Wii U, the most recent being the new Aliens game, the works for Wii U. It's sad. You wonder, you know, how can there be such a disparity between Nintendo as a portable manufacturer versus Nintendo as a hardware manufacturer? So I'm hoping that Mario Kart and
from today.
Yeah, but
no, I've been zombie today.
The Eurogamer article, but we won't discuss that on air because we have awards. But yes, best soundtrack of 2013. Ryo, you two contenders here. We had The Last of Us, and we had A Link Between Worlds, and A Link Between Worlds 1. So, does anybody want to talk about that soundtrack?
I just love the soundtrack because it's like, it reimagines the original tunes from
the
Super Nintendo game, A Link to the Past, which already had great music, but it's not orchestral, and they do some pretty clever things with it, and the music is just generally just really, really good. It's more reimagining on the of the music than just updating it, and I love it for that.
Yeah, I guess one of the other things, and I think it's this game, is like how the music kind of fades out when you go into the wall margin. It's always those little neat tricks they do with music.
That's a cool effect.
So something I noticed today is when you go through a crack between from Hyrule to Lowrule, the Hyrule music sort of goes all weird as you get to halfway, which is really cool. I really like that.
Yeah.
And another
thing. What I'll say about the soundtrack is, go on.
I was going to say another little thing they do is, I forget the name of the things that you collect. The mermaids?
Mamais.
Yeah, they sing the theme song when you get them. Dun, dun, dun,
yeah.
Da. Yeah, they whistle it as well. That's so cute. Oh, what are you going to say, Anthony?
All I'll say about the soundtrack is that, I mean, aside from the obvious, you know, remasterings of classic tracks, and each dungeon had its own theme, which is neat. If you haven't gone to the Milk Bar to see the ocarina and guitar arrangements of some classic Zelda songs from over the past few years, you need to do that. It sounds great coming out of the 3DS speakers and headphones, and it's, you know, you pay whatever 10 rupees to do it, but it's really, really nice arrangements, and it was just a surprise to find that there. It's good.
And like I said, it's actually pretty good quality for, if you think about a module-based system.
Yeah.
Next up is best voice actor or actress. We had Troy Baker as Joe from The Last of Us, Courtney Draper as Elizabeth from BioShock Infinite, and I didn't bother to get her name, but Tess from The Last of Us. And to nobody's great surprise, Troy Baker as Joe won.
Yay!
And since he's been quiet for a while, we're going to have Jason take this one.
Well, it was pretty much picking between Troy Baker's like 7 performances this year. I mean, The Last of Us, you know, it was it's just a phenomenally acted game across the entire cast, and you know, it relies heavily on those performances, because there's a lot of cutscenes, and Naughty Dog, of course, did entire performance capture, not just voice, so the acting is a very big part of that experience. And I mean, and Troy Baker plays obviously the lead role, Joel, who you control, so, and he does a great job. I mean, that character, without like going into spoilers, you know, goes through some really deep personal issues, and it really informs his perspective on this like post-apocalyptic kind of world. And I think, you know, Troy just kind of totally captures that and captures the way he evolves throughout the game.
Yes.
With his relationship with Ellie, which changes completely over the course of the game. And, like, the acting really, really nails that, like, emotional evolution of that character.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I would especially agree on, that evolution, even that it's not just the acting. I mean, because they did performance capture, but actually the voice, you can hear the different inflections over time, and that's just amazing. I think Trebeka had a couple of great performances this year, but this one was beyond all of them.
Yeah.
Speaking of Troy Baker, he's also the first recipient of our Nolan North Award for consistent voiceover work. As we mentioned, he's in The Last of Us, he's in Bioshock Infinite, he's in Batman Arkham Origins, he's in Lego Marvel Super Heroes, he's in Skyenders, he's in Infinity Blade, he's in Saints Row 4, he's in Phoenix Wright apparently. he's in Injustice Gods Among Us. He has gotten around to a lot of video games this year. He's in God of War Ascension. So yes, it was a major, major year. I guess Nolan North decided to take a vacation this year.
And then the said to Troy Baker, his buddy, you take over this year.
And it's not even like he was minor characters. He was major players in almost all of these games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was actually surprised how good his Joker was.
Even though it does sound like a poor man's Mark Hamill at times.
Yeah, but still really good.
And wait, Troy Baker is Simon Blackwell? What?
Troy Baker is everybody. Troy Baker is inside of us all.
Oh, yeah. that just sounds wrong, Earl.
That was the point. this is always such a tough one, but most innovative title of 2013. Again, an award we don't have a clear winner for. The Wonderful 101, Far Cry 3, Brothers 2, So, and Ironclad Tactics, which is 4 nominees, so we're missing somebody's vote.
Not mine.
Brothers is mine.
Yeah, I think it's Anthony's, but
I picked the one for 101.
Then who are we missing? What did you have, Jason?
What category is this for?
Most innovative. Oh, we're missing my vote.
I had Tearaway.
Wait, if you had Tearaway, then what is... Then who has Brothers?
That's mine.
Okay, then who's Far Cry 3?
That was my original one that I changed to
Tearaway. Okay. That's... Okay, so... I'm gonna go with Anthony on the Wonderful 101 here. Just because I think it's a very interesting battle system in the way that it combines combos and the touchscreen. It's not for everybody, as Refuse kind of shown, but once you get the hang of it, it's pretty hard to think of going back to it, because even using the right analog stick, I can't consistently draw it out of the shapes that they want from you. But just being able to drop these special weapons in the heat of the battle and using multiple ones at a time really does add a new flavor to that character action genre that Platinum excels at so much.
It's something that, like, in my opinion, like, when people hadn't seen Portal before, like, it's a huge learning curve, but when you get the hang of it, it's just this aha moment. And that's what you see when you look at the combat system of the Wonderful 101 for the first time. You're like, what is going on? But the wow moment for me was when you could draw a formation and then hit the alternate button and then have the computer attack with the gun or the whip or the sword while you were attacking someone else with the it's a mix of real quick RTS mixed up with the beat 'em up and the charm of Beautiful Joe.
Yes, yes. And it's batshit insane, as we'll get to in a bit. Best game mechanics, Wonderful 101, drawing your combos, remember me, customizable combos, Papers, Please, I think it's Document Sorting,
Scanning. Yeah.
The wall merging technology from the Legend of Zelda AF Between Worlds. And some Martin said Iron Cat Tactics, but what did you put?
Because it's basically a real-time CCG.
Which is...
So you create deck of cards with robots and different, basically, fighters for you or weapons. And then once the game starts, you basically get a random hand at the beginning of the fight. And then over time, you basically get new cards into your hand and old ones get sorted out. And while that is going on, you can pick cards from your hand and put it onto the field into different lanes. And then they go from left to right. So it's all timing based. And at the same time, it still has this deck building mechanic and choosing when to use which card because they all have different abilities. So it's a really clever system that I have not seen anywhere else.
Okay, which also means we have 5 nominees once again. So who is going to trip on their own choice and go with something else?
I'd be willing to go down with the wall merging in Link Between Worlds. Could have been a gimmick, but it was done really, really well. It wasn't like each dungeon focused on it. The puzzles used it when you least expected it or had it in the back of your mind.
Okay. So
and my problem with that is that I don't think it's that original. I have seen something like this before.
I think there was a PlayStation 3 PSN title that did it. Here's the thing, and this is always unfair, I guess, but I always feel like it's the game that popularizes it that really gets credit for it. Like, I assume it's something that's been seen before, but I feel like it's going to be accredited to Link Between Worlds because it's the first mainstream game to make use of it, and I do think it makes use of it better than those other games because it is a key part of the game, but it's not the only part of the game. Where a lot of those other games, that was their one big gimmick. This was a part of the game's overall structure, and it did allow you to kind of think of the not just the dungeon design, but even the overworld design in a whole new way as far as Zelda games go. So, okay, we're going with wall merging from In Between Worlds. And we're going to go with, I guess next up will be Biggest Surprise, and we'll start off with Jason.
My biggest surprise was the NES remix for Wii U, which just barely made 2013 on December 31st. But, I mean, just the idea of it, and for anyone who hasn't heard of it, it's Nintendo taking their old, like, NES games and, like, mixing characters with levels. So, I haven't actually played any of them, but it's just the whole idea of it. Just crazy and awesome and a cool way to kind of revisit retro properties.
You go ahead, Anthony.
As far as mine goes, biggest surprise, I honestly wasn't expecting much from Link Between Worlds. Maybe it's because of just the hype and the everything that goes into a console Zelda release. The handheld ones are kind of overlooked, but as I got further into the game and as I progressed further, you saw how many smart things there were, how many things there were to do without it being too overwhelming. It still managed to appeal to your curiosity as opposed to thinking you had this laundry list of things to look and side quests to do. It's been a while since a game had hooked me for longer play sessions after I finished school and started a job. But Link Between Worlds had some really great puzzles, had great music. The pacing was awesome compared to the slow starts and whatever the console games. It's shaped up to be my favorite 3DS game of all time and my game of the year, which was a big surprise to me.
I picked Gone Home because I guess I can see why people wouldn't pick Gone Home. It's a game that very, very much relies on your ability to relate to it and the situations and sort of the environment and the people that it presents to you. But that's exactly why like it was my biggest surprise, because, and the biggest surprise for a lot of other people, because it treats a lot of personal issues that a lot of people have with respect, and it's just like, obviously it's a game about people, and you don't see that very often, you know, because we've got games about, I know you're like a space marine and you're the only one who can save the galaxy or whatever, and this is just like two people that are in love, and you know, and also, I mean,
No spoilers. I've got it waiting on my desktop.
Yeah, I'm not. But it, you know, it's just so like, if you grew up in the 90s, there's probably going to be something there for you, because, and I think that the sort of choice to set it in the 90s was a very smart one, and also I think it was kind of surprising at the reaction it got, like, because a lot of, every reaction I've seen to the game in a good way is like very different to mine. And very, they were very different to each other's as well, which is great. It's kind of what you want to see in a game like that. And also, I'm kind of surprised at how many people went out of their way to hate on it, because it's not a game, or you can finish it in 1 minute if you so wanted to, you know? And, like, if you don't like it, just leave it alone. You'd like, whenever it gets brought up, somebody has to harp on about how it's not a game. Just leave it, for God's sake.
Are you saying
it's not
gaming,
doing you any harm?
Are you saying the gaming community can be a negative bunch? Huh. Surprising. Martin?
I'm actually going to call an audible on my choice. And I'm going to say my biggest surprise was that I actually like the 2DS. It looks butt ugly.
You have a 2DS.
But it actually is the most comfortable 3DS system out there. And
whoa,
that was my biggest surprise. Yes. I played
it
with them all.
It's most comfortable.
It's actually more comfortable even than the XL. Because
I've been waiting
can
for so long to
stretch my hands across the whole system and don't have to kind of, you know, even with the XL, because it's bigger, it's still a little bit too small. It's not like controller size, and that's what the 2DS is, and that's why it's a big surprise to me that I like playing with it so much.
I've been waiting for a demo kiosk to show off the 2DS, and I still have not been able to get my hands on one. I know it looks, you know, weird, and people give it crap for that, but I knew right when I saw that, like, that looks comfortable.
Yeah. Also, it has the best image quality because it's a pure 2D screen.
I'd be interested to know if I could actually play Mario Kart on a 2DS without my hand hurting, because that's the reason why I don't play Mario Kart a lot at the moment. It's
because
the 3DS
because
just makes
of
my
the
hand
L&R?
Hurt. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, it shouldn't be a problem with a 2DS, to be honest. Because also those buttons are huge on that thing.
Yeah.
Which is good. They should be.
They should be. They are child friendly. Just for minds, I said it before, but it's NES Remix, which is honestly a game that came out of nowhere in the 12th hour of the year, or at least the same day it was announced. And I'm still not really sure what type of genre I classify it as, but it is a ton of fun, and I would love to see them and other companies kind of pursue this idea in the future of just kind of taking their older games and kind of remixing it to be mini achievement hunts. Where you do certain, it's basically a micro achievement game where you do certain things in a game in a set number of time, and you try to get the highest possible time to get stars and compare it with your friends and stuff like that. It's just a pleasant surprise to see somebody kind of take the innovation that we have.
Earl, do you get to compare your times with friends?
You don't get to compare it directly with friends, which I think is annoying, which is why I think something should be done, but you do get to compare it with other people. It's that Nintendo mentality where, like, you get to compare it with people close to you, so you don't feel like you're doing awful, but you get to think, okay, I can probably shave off a second or two here. And it's a great mentality for certain people because it's like, oh, I'm not, like, the problem with leaderboards is sometimes you get so intimidated by the top score that you don't want to try. But if you have something like, oh, okay, this guy's within a 0.2 seconds of me, I can do something to shave off that time. And what they also do is they usually show you somebody who has rainbows, so you kind of have a bare minimum of how much time you need to get rainbow stars, which is another cool little feature. Granted, they do have a tendency of doing this. There's no real great reward at the end, even if you get like rainbow stars in all of the games, which I think is always kind of lame. So yeah, biggest surprise down the drain. Best subtitle, our Cub Penguin Elite Penguin Penguin Force Award. I think that's the name of the game. Only two real nominees this year: Metal Gear Rising: Revengeance and Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. And overwhelmingly, Metal Gear Rising: Revengeance won, because Revengeance is a fantastic word.
Yes.
Well, here's the reason why I voted for it too.
It's really dumb.
The subtitle's so ridiculous. And that perfectly encapsulates the game. Because the game is also ridiculous.
I mean, Blood Dragon is also pretty dumb, but it makes more sense. And that's why Revengeance won.
Here's what really won me over, though, is that Platinum somehow found a way to work the word Revengeance into the Wonderful 101. one of the enemies you meet actually says he's going to get his Revengeance on you. And it's like,
great.
It makes no sense, but thank you for actually working it into your other game. So yeah, it's Metal Gear Rising: Revengeance.
God damn it, we are going to make it make sense if we have to.
Well, if nothing else, it's nice to see them play on their own history. Like, nobody else is going to use this word, but god damn it, it's going to be an arcane from now on. Best writing, nominees are The Last of Us, Far Cry Blood Dragon, and Attack of the Friday Monsters. And the winner is, to nobody's great surprise, The Last of Us.
Woo!
Jason, you want to take this?
I don't know, I didn't have that much to say about it other than it's like a really well-written game. And we kind of touched on it a little with talking about Troy Baker playing Joel, but it's refreshingly like mature and intelligent, and not mature in a way that's hyper violent, although it is also pretty violent, but just I don't know, the characters are super interesting, they grow throughout the tale, and like they set
the
up the
about,
gameplay smart.
Of all the writing of this game is, like we previously said about the voice acting, is that it really focuses on the characters. And that is what makes it interesting. Yes, there is this kind of other story going on, but that just, after a while, just is total background to what is going on between Joel and basically his replacement daughter, and how those two interact with each other, and how they grow together, and how other people react to this relationship between them. And that's what's so amazing about the writing, that this story of trying to find a cure is totally irrelevant to the writing of this game in a sense, and that's what's amazing about it. And not many games do that.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention something. I think it might come up later, even though I don't think it wins this. The other thing that I was really surprised with this game is that it's one of the few video games that kind of does this big dystopian future without making it a really brown and dusty world. Like, the world is actually colorful and looks lived in without seeing like it's this run down. Like, it is broken, but it's not like brown. It has color, it has like foliage, it has, you know, different areas that it could be in it. And I think that was a big part of kind of the game. It's like, there is kind of hope in this world, and that is part of the story with the girl. But the world actually has hope as well, because a lot of these games just think, okay, we need something, so we're just going to make it brown and dusty and no color and drain a knife out of it, and this game doesn't.
It has really good world building, is what you want to say.
Well, I meant that, and I just meant like visually, it's something that gives hope to these characters, where a lot of these other games, it's just like, oh, we're just going to cover you in brown and say, like, this is the future. Best boss fight. We got a bunch of like games with hard shiny suggestions. Hammerhead fight from, I'm drawing a blank, I should have written the game down.
From Metal Gear Rising.
Metal Gear Rising.
Helicopter boss fight.
Okay.
All right.
which I picked because, if I just made it really quick, because to fit at the end of the boss fight, it shoots a bunch of missiles at you, and you run and jump on each missile to get up to the helicopter before taking it out with a slow motion slice mechanic, and it's just so badass.
Yep, that happens.
I wonder if that's a homage to Twin Snakes.
I could have also understood that you picked the end boss because you fight the president.
Yeah.
Which is also pretty rad.
Yeah, except I just hated the end boss fight.
It's not a good boss fight, but what goes on dialogue-wise and stuff is pretty amazing.
The Wonderful 101, which, real quick, I picked because the final boss is about an hour and a half long.
Oh, wow. I'm not there yet.
Which really does sound like it's long and tedious, but it is the most amazing thing in the world because it just kind of keeps on building. It's a multi-layered boss, of course, so it keeps on building and building and building and building to the point where it's just like this ridiculously over-the-top nonsense that is so fantastic to play. It's just an amazing experience. And the music, since Anthony's in the middle of playing it, I'm not going to ruin it. But, I mean, this is like everything you wanted in a Power Rangers game ever. And then it takes up a notch. And then it takes it up another notch. And it has fantastic bosses all throughout. I mean, it's a homage to Punch-Out. There's a Star Fox boss battle. So they have all these different types of boss battles. And they hardly ever recycle them, which is an amazing thing to begin with. And
yeah,
our winner...
Every level is new. Every concept is new. It's great.
Which is very surprising because it's not a short game. It's like 15 hours. And our winner, no great surprise, I guess, is The Legend of Zelda A Link Between Worlds. Specifically, the final boss battle against Yuga.
I sense a trend here with this game.
I just beat him again while we're talking.
And
it's
I don't
a really good boss fight.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it because Daniel's in the middle of it. But it does what a boss fight needs to do. Is that it builds on everything you've accomplished over the course of the game without cheapening it. Because a lot of games, they just kind of throw this final boss at you that earns this new technique that you haven't used at all in the game. Where this game's like, okay, you know what? You've been using this, this, and that. We're going to give it to you. Now you have all of these tools, and we're going to give you this final boss battle. Do what you want. And it's just a fantastic boss battle with a...
And
I mean,
then they even introduced something new during the best boss battle.
Yeah,
I love
them, I hate them. The Zelda games always know how to end. I don't know of any of the recent games that have a terrible final boss encounter. Mm. Even Skyward Sword, which I love, but I know a lot of people are kind of iffy on it. The Desmond fight is fantastic, and that encounter where you're running up to the final... in prison fight where like he has to fight all those goblins.
You have to kill all the moblins.
Yeah, and he gives that badass like just get it on face is amazing. But yeah. So
what about Majora's Mask final boss? It kind of lets you have you collect all the masks, you get to be awesome fierce deity, but it makes the final boss a joke.
Yeah, but you get to be badass Ink.
True.
So it takes a lot to get there too.
Yeah. Worst box art of 2013 are our Batman Game of the Year Edition Award, because those boxes are awful, was between Fuse and Saints Row 4. I really just want to keep on calling it Saints Row the 4th.
I think they intentionally messed up the names, because if you have the games on Steam, it goes Saints Row 2, and then Saints Row 4, and then Saints Row the 3rd. That's how it orders them.
Yeah, but the winner is Fuse. Not for being particularly bad, but for being extremely generic. Extraordinarily generic.
Plus having cut-off faces just looks dumb.
Yeah, I don't get the point of that. If you don't want to show the characters, then we're going to show you their crotch. They're growing crotches, because that's where the light is focused.
Or someone realized, it's too generic, we have to do something.
But this is even more generic. I mean, I think Jason had an article about like, a box art where people are just standing in front of the yoga with the gun. This is four of them now. And I'm sure you know the thing about the orange and blue contrast is like the most generic thing on a movie poster. So, yeah. It's like the best of both worlds. So, yes, there we go.
Oh,
We are going to try to determine the worst game of 2013. Which I always assume, I always thought it was a terrible award, because I feel like we don't play out of these games. So, I didn't even have nominees written down for this, because I think it was something we're going to determine on the air. So,
Aliens, Colonial Marines.
That's okay, probably pretty fair.
I think we have... do we have any other contenders?
Aliens, Colonial Marines is pretty up there, just because, I mean, it's probably not the worst game out there from 2013, but it's, I mean, how they lied about the game, basically, makes it a pretty special case.
I'm going to suggest Ashes 2013, because it's one of the few games I know that have been cancelled after they were released.
The thing is, though, is with Ashes 2013, they at least had the balls to say, okay, we messed up, you know, we're not going to sell the game anymore, because it's that bad.
Yeah, but after they sold the game.
You know, well, yeah, but they did it pretty quick. Whereas Randy Pitchford had the gall to defend Aliens Colonial Marines.
I'm just throwing it out there. I think Aliens Colonial Marine is, especially being that I think that's a great case of... don't trust the PR, because what we saw and what we got were radically two different things.
Or in this case, don't trust RP, which is Randy Pitchford, because he loves the sound of his own bloody voice.
So if I actually wanted to pick something that's truly terrible, I probably would pick Retribution, Ride to Hell, or it's just Ride to Hell.
Ride
to Hell Retribution.
Yeah, Ride to Hell Retribution. That's pretty bad.
So it was a good year. It was a good year.
Barely playable, I would say.
So, I mean, I think we're going to give it to Aliens Colonial Marine because it was a terrible game, but as Daniel said, it also has like a terrible... It kept on being a terrible game that it kept on trying to defend, and I think they even patched it. And it's still a terrible game.
They patched it quite a lot, especially if you have the PC version, but it's still not a good game.
And that's always a bad thing. Okay, so next up is our, I don't even know if this is biggest or what, but news story of 2013. Biggest news story of 2013, there we go, I actually have it in my notes. I mean, there's really only one contender, but, just to kind of throw some of these out there, Lucas Arc Shosher, I think, was a big thing. Even though Star Wars has found a new home with the Yuffin family. So, look forward to your microtransaction Star Wars from EA, if it works.
God.
THQ closure, which was a 2013 story, but we all pretty much knew it was happening from 2012.
Yeah, I think at the end of 2012, we were like, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, and the biggest one, I mean, this took up most of the year, from its announcement to its backfiring, was the Microsoft DRM issue with Xbox One. We've talked about this a lot on this show because it was a huge part of the year. Does anybody want to comment on it now?
They were pretty dumb to think that it would fly, and it obviously didn't, so they had to backpedal, and now they have to see how they can win back people to by the platform.
Yeah, I mean,
if you ask me, I don't care if it's if they reversed it or not. I don't trust Microsoft anymore. It's as simple as that. Between that and the microtransactions, if I had a choice, if I could trust Microsoft, I would buy an Xbox One over a PS4, but I can't. I just can't do it anymore, and Xbox Live doesn't prevent me value for money, so that's it, I'm out. I can't buy an Xbox One as far as I'm concerned.
It just really seems like they will never act in the best interest of you.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest takeaway from this whole ordeal. I mean, granted, they did backpedal, but this was after months of negative feedback from consumers and even people in the industry. So, it's to say, even if they do something like this in the future, like, it's going to take a lot of effort to get them to change their minds again, and do you really want to go through that? Especially when there's another viable contender on the market who seems to be catering to your every need. Okay. Our graphics awards. First up is technical achievement in visuals, which... Okay. And the nominees were The Last of Us for its achievement on what it accomplished on the PlayStation 3, Pokemon X and Y for what it accomplished on the 3DS, and of course our winner again, Battlefield 4 for what it accomplishes on everything. And this is not the part of the game that doesn't work, it's just that it looks good.
I wouldn't say though on everything, because I don't think the last gen versions look particularly great.
Yeah, no.
I mean,
next gen and PC.
It doesn't necessarily look great, but again, the engine, as far as I know, it's still rock solid. It's still 60 frames per second.
No, not last gen.
Not on last gen.
No.
Okay.
Not at all. If you see the multiplayer, it looks like there's like some PS2 level textures shit going on. It's really bad. So on next gen PC, yes. On last gen, not so much.
Okay, but yeah, Battlefield 4. I think Battlefield 3 won this award the first time we did it. It's a great engine. It's nothing against the game because it doesn't work, but it looks good when it doesn't. Okay, and our next one is visual achievement in gaming, and the nominees were BioShock Infinite, Pokemon X and Y, Tearaway, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, or is it? Yeah, I think that's the name of it.
Yeah.
And our winner was Tearaway.
Ooh.
Good for that game getting some recognition.
Well, because Sony isn't going to give
really
it.
It's really nice. You can't deny they have a really cool art style with the paper craft stuff. It looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fan. I mean, it's a game that I wish was not necessarily on another platform because I think it was a game that's catered for the Vita, but it needed some type of marketing behind it. I think putting it out the same time as the Xbox One, The Legend of Zelda, Super Mario 3D World was just terrible. Are you wrapping me up?
Is that the music there?
It's music. It's like... Okay, I guess we're moving on.
That our winner for best music?
That might be.
What is that?
That is the credit theme of Link Between Worlds.
Okay, so you finished the game and now you're taunting us.
I'm so glad.
Well, I finished it a few days ago, but I tried to. For some reason, I thought that there was a button combination where you could screen grab the screen, like, you know, I'll take a picture of the credits. So I hit L, R, start, and select, and turns out that resets the system, even if you didn't save since before you started the last dungeon.
Yeah, the way you do it is you just press home. It's like the Wii now. It's like the Wii U now. You just press home.
You have to press home and then go into Miiverse first.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's it. Learn that.
It's a good job I knew that button combination reset it, because it's been doing that in the Pokemon game since forever, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. I should have known. I wasn't thinking.
The over-the-top moment of craziness award of 2013. Tomb Raider, when Nora's being chased by anything. Paul the Soda Can from Saints Row 4. And the Wonderful 101, pick any part of that game. And the winner is the Wonderful
101. Wait. I didn't get the memo that this was part of our list. So I didn't get to pick anything.
It's in the email.
No, it's not mine.
It's in the email,
it's
said.
At the very bottom.
It's the last one.
That's why I obviously didn't fill it out. Otherwise I would have. Anyway, mine is Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
The whole game.
Yes.
I think
you cut dudes in half with a katana between your feet.
Look, please, can you stop taunting me? Because I don't want to buy the game yet because I've got no time to play it.
You should. Like,
free on
well, you should buy it on PC from what I've been hearing.
Well, they fixed that. It was just a bug.
Yeah,
I did it. It's free on PlayStation Plus this month, isn't it? But
yeah.
You don't have a PS4.
I don't know.
Oh, I know. I know DMC. I got that already. I think next year we're just going to rename this to the Platinum Award, because I assume they're going to win every year. But yes, like I said before, the Wonderful 101, you can pretty much pick any moment of that. Either it's fighting a giant volcano, it's fighting a robot in a giant volcano, it's piloting a giant robot, it's controlling 100 enemies and 100 characters, including Santa Claus, it's fighting giant robots, it's controlling giant robots.
I just want to say one of the ways that one of the bosses ended. It's early on, but it's like you're fighting this giant mech, and then you can form your like wonder hand, and then it's a giant hand or whatever. And so this giant mech you've been fighting, eventually, like in Lion King fashion, like is hanging off a cliff, and he's trying to get back up. And then you do wonder hand, and then here's this giant fist of yours that rears back, and it's like a quick time event, rears back, and as you're going forward, it tells you to tap A to tickle. And then it starts to tickle the pit, and then he falls to his death.
Yes.
Of a giant mech.
That's pretty good.
Yes. It's one of those games that you really, really have to experience. Fantastic from start to finish. Amazing boss battles. I don't really know what else to say. It is my number 2 game of the year. And I guess that is the perfect segue to our Game of the Year award, because we always agree on this so easily.
I mean, this year we might actually agree on something easily. It's just not anyone's number one pick.
Maybe it is. We'll go around the table and hear. We'll start off with Jason. And just for the record, I'm just going in order of everybody on my screen, which is probably going to say
Well, probably... Spoiler alert, but you probably already know if you heard the Games of the Generation podcast, but my Game of the Year is The Last of Us. I mean, just top down, just such a well-executed experience all the way through. Mechanics, writing, acting, visuals, everything. Environment. Great stuff.
Yes. Martin?
My number one game is Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate. It's probably the game I've spent most of my time with last year. It's just an incredible game with how every hunt is so different depending on which monster you're going to hunt, how you have to basically master the mechanics of your weapon, and then actually learn patterns of these monsters to fight them effectively, and it's just so rewarding when you get all this stuff right, and it's so much fun to play with multiple people. It's probably also one of my favorite co-op games ever. So, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate.
Okay, Daniel?
I haven't finished it yet, but it's got to be A Link Between Worlds, because I'm just liking it so much more than I thought I would do. I don't have a single fault about to mention about the game, to be honest. Not one.
Okay. Anthony?
My pick I mentioned before is A Link Between Worlds. It reinvigorized my taste for 2D over-the-head, top-down Zeldas that the DS, it skipped out on the DS. So it was good to have a new, adventure sequel to what a lot of people consider to be the greatest game of all time. And you know what's, I'm talking about this and all the discussion, one that hasn't really come up, unless I missed Earl mentioning it earlier, was Super Mario 3D World.
Which is mine, but...
Yeah. I thought it was a fantastic game in multiplayer. Brought a lot to it, and it's a lot of fun, and it's good, concise, just good platforming, and it's fun. The music's fantastic. It didn't catch me as much as Galaxy did, though. I don't think. I mean, I go back to Galaxy, and it involved you in a bigger world. I think because it's primarily single player. 3D World is limited by its four player, which is fun, definitely for a party, but it limits what it can do as far as the crazy stuff goes, even though it did have its fair share of crazy stages and cameos and gimmicks, which I won't get to, so if you do play it, it'll surprise you. But A Link Between Worlds had a lot of great game mechanics, awesome puzzles, good pacing, just a lot. It made it fun to explore again, and I loved it every second of it.
I mean, it seems like we have a clear winner anyhow, but mine's in Super Mario 3D World, as I just hinted at, and I mentioned last week on our countdown show. And it's pretty much the same reason I've given, I think at this point, I've given a Mario 3D game of the year for me for the last 7 years with the two Galaxy games, 3D and now 3D World. Is that
you're
at the
such
end
a fanboy.
I'm a huge fanboy.
I don't think
any of us
are surprised.
A gigantic fanboy. I've told people this before. I'm not a Nintendo fan. I'm a Mario fan. But there is a reason for it, and it's the reason that he continues to make terrific, terrific games. Or I should say, sorry, he doesn't make them. I hope that would be really weird. And the fact that
I like to believe he makes them. No, I like to believe he makes them. Let's go with that.
Plumber turned programmer.
Well, it's more people would have come and turned doctor, so. But yeah, it's just because at the end of the day, they tend to, I mean, yeah, it gives me everything I want in a game. Precise control, a great camera that never gets in the way, a ton of variety, and you never really know what to expect around the next corner, which is why I tended to prefer the 3D games over the 2D games, because the 2D games were really stuck to their theme. But in like 3D World, you get a Mario Kart stage, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, but why not? You get a Japanese like house stage with fantastic music that they use once. You get a circus stage. You get the hover stages. You get a bunch of random nonsense that doesn't make a lot of sense, but why not? Because it doesn't have to play by any rules, and it's the one thing I love about video games. It's not constrained by budgets like movies, and it's not constrained by real world like a lot of books are. It can be whatever it wants to be, and Mario tends to excel at that because at the end of the day, Mario has no rules. It's not trying to be realistic, and it's not trying to be fantasy. It's trying to be whatever the hell it wants to be. I will agree with Anthony in that I don't think it's necessarily better than the Galaxy games, but it reminds me of an old Fantastic Four story. I think the first time they fought Galactus, you think that once you fight this planet-eating creature that you'd have to go bigger, and what they did instead was go smaller because you couldn't top that, so you went more intimate. And that's what 3D World does, is you can't go beyond Galaxy. Maybe they can in the future, but right now, you really would have been tough to top Galaxy, so go in a different direction. Go more grounded, go more basic, go back to what made Mario great, and that's what we have on the Sway here. I think the addition of multiplayer, which I haven't tried, but the addition of multiple characters who play differently also adds a lot of variety, because it does, I mean, I've never had an issue controlling Mario, but it is nice to say, okay, I'm going to use this stage with Peach, or I'm going to play this stage with Luigi, or say that you're having trouble and you're just going to cheat and cheese with a jump, or go with Luigi because he jumps higher, or I haven't actually found a practical use for Toad at all yet, so I don't really know. And then the fact that they have, like, mini-games that I feel could be entire games on their own, like the Captain Toad stages, I would personally buy a DLC pack of that if they did that, because it's just a really fun little puzzle game that they could expand and do their own thing. Or even the mystery boxes, which are really minor time trials. But, fantastic game, great music. Doesn't really matter, because it seems like I think we're all in agreement that The Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds is our game of the year. Is there any disagreement here?
Pretty much sounds like I haven't played it yet myself, but so yeah, I couldn't vote for it.
Two people picked it as number one game, and it's my number two. And it actually was close for me to pick it over Monster Hunter, but I just played more of Monster Hunter. That's why I picked it. So I would be happy to see Zelda win our game of the year.
Here's some disagreement. Is Nerd on the Rocks run by a bunch of baby 12-year-olds? Call of Duty is easily the most gritty, most mature shooter. Zelda and Mario's for babies. You all suck and you're gay.
Well, I mean, just to offer kind of a dissented opinion, even though I do like Link Between Worlds, I think I mentioned this last week, my biggest gripe with the game is the item system, which I think is a great idea, but because of how it's executed in the game, it really does kind of hamper the difficulty progression, where I feel like a lot of the puzzles don't really evolve over the course of the game until the end, because the game doesn't know what you have when you enter a dungeon other than the item that you need for the dungeon. Where I think
I didn't think it was a big of a deal, and I still believe that there is some stuff that's still brainy and there are still items that you definitely need that you can't rent. So
no, there are. They give you stuff, and they do make a good use of it. But for the most part, like if you go into a Fire Rod dungeon, 90% of the puzzles in that game will be solved with the Fire Rod in some fashion. If you go in a Sand Rod dungeon, it's the same thing.
Is that so different from before when you got like an item and then you use that item most of the time in that dungeon? It really isn't. The benefit of this system is that you can actually now choose in which order you want to take the temples. And that, I think, is the big deal.
And that is terrific because like you ask any two people, and ask any of us, and I'm sure we all tackle the dungeons in a different order. Like I think I tackle one of my ass dungeons is one that a lot of people tackle first and stuff like that. But I guess you know, like maybe I'm summarizing it, but even like looking back at Skyward Sword, and I think Skyward Sword did do stuff differently. Is that Skyward Sword gave you a set number of items, and it recycled them often in dungeons because it's like, okay, we know you have the whip, we know you have the beetle, we know you have the bomb, so we're going to have you do these puzzles where you need to use these in a different way to solve this room instead of saying, here's just this whip, and you're going to use it all throughout this dungeon.
Well,
like I said,
you have to remember, it's still a sequel to A Link to the Past, and if you remember how Link to the Past played, you haven't played it, so you don't.
Wait, whoa, time out. Link to the Past is one of my top three Zelda games.
Oh, right, you have played it. I think Jason was the one who didn't play it, right?
I did play it.
No, Daniel hasn't played it, but...
that's also bad. You should finish it. Anyway, if you remember correctly, when you got, like, the boomerang, the dungeon with the boomerang revolved all around the boomerang. Same with the hook shot and stuff like that. It really isn't that different.
Yeah, I guess. I was just giving some dissenting opinion. I still like the game a lot.
No, you don't. You hate it, Earl. What are you talking about?
But yes, I think this is one of our easier ones because it is a fantastic game. And even with my gripes, it's a great game. It plays well. The dungeons are cool. I really am a fan of like the Dark World dungeon. Not the Dark World, but the Dark Light dungeon.
Yeah, that was probably the trickiest one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It messes with you because it expects you not to do what you typically would do in that time.
Yeah.
My least favorite one was the... Forest Dungeon, just because the Forest Dungeon in A Link to the Past is one of my favorite Zelda dungeons, and I feel like they tried to do that gimmick again, and it didn't work as well.
Mm. Also, game runs 60 FPS. Pretty amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll agree there.
Pretty nice. Smooth experience. Oh,
and another thing, which you haven't talked about, I don't even think we talked about when we talked about the game, is its use of 3D actually works.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know either.
it does.
It is good.
It does help with some of the puzzles because it does help you kind of differentiate between the levels, which comes in handy because they do like to hide stuff. And like I think that you get the compass pretty early and you have to map the entire time. But there's like one of the rooms where it's like a treasure chest which is hidden between two levels, and the way to find it is you have to go into this like you're cracking between the two walls, and it's like you wouldn't know it until you sort of line it up with the map and the stage, and it's like it's not on top and it's not on bottom, so you have to go in between it. It's a really great use of 3D when it works, and they don't use it often in that other thing when it kind of fins him upwards or downwards on the screen, which is kind of neat as well. But A Link to the Past, A Link Between Worlds is a fantastic, fantastic game. I would just say one thing I didn't get, because I saw a lot of criticism about this before the game came out. I don't think it's an ugly game at all. I don't get why people were saying that.
I had some problems with art when I saw screenshots, but once I played it, it was fine.
I still think Link looks stupid.
I agree.
His hair looks
fine, but actually...
Yeah, I was about to say, his hair should be pink, and that would have been extra stupid, but...
No, it should be pink for accuracy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this isn't the same Link, it's a sequel, but... And I would also say, we mentioned before with the final boss, but I love the final twist and turns. Those are amazing.
Yeah.
And
good,
I love that... I also love that it has, like, a very minimalist storytelling. I mean, I have the recent 3D Zelda games, but this one's just kind of like, okay, you have to find these seven things. You have to rescue these seven sages. Here you go. And that's pretty much the story for, like, most of the game.
And I think there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. It's a great thing. I mean, I think
I like the simpler stories in Zelda because I think when they try these more involved stories in Zelda, I think for most of them, they're pretty dumb. I don't enjoy them.
I like the stories in them. I think a lot of what people have issues with is sometimes they take time to set up, which I think was a big problem for people. I would try a Princess and Skyward Sword. It takes like 2-3 hours to set up the world and the characters before you kind of get going, which would work, I guess, if you were interested in the stories and stuff like that. And it is kind of a story we've heard before, just kind of mixed around, I guess. But yes, it's a very minimalist game. I also think it highlights the fact of something we probably all know. I don't know if you necessarily all agree with. It was the year of the 3DS. Just a fantastic system last year.
Yep.
I think I had like 3 or 4 games on the 3DS.
Yeah, I think half of my game of the year.
I have 3
of
my top 7, and I haven't even played Zelda yet.
I haven't played Fire Emblem Awakening, which from the demo is a fantastic game. But Mansion, fantastic. Pokemon X and Y, fantastic. I think Between Worlds, fantastic.
Bravely Default, fantastic.
Oh, you guys don't have it! Ace Attorney 5?
Hush you. How is Shin Megami Tensei 4?
I don't know.
Exactly. Ace Attorney 5, Attack of the Friday Monsters, which we mentioned. It was just a stellar year for it all and all around. And I think the funniest thing about it is that it's very Mario-like as far as their great content for the 3DS goes.
Yeah.
How's that, Nintendo?
Hopefully they can keep it up. They've already announced some dates, but yeah. It was a great year for gaming. I would say it was a great year for if you were a PS 3DS owner. With stuff like, The Last of Us racked up a lot of awards as well here. So, here's to 2014. I don't know if we're doing a year in preview episode, but I know we should be back next week with me.
There's not a lot of stuff announced, to be honest.
Yeah, I was about to say, next week we're going to come back because we have missed a couple of huge news stories this week, including PlayStation Now, which sounds fantastic.
I want to talk about that Nintendo article. It was just too precious.
That Nintendo article, we had Evolve, we had Aliens, I don't remember the subtitle.
Infestation.
Isn't that already a game?
Isolation. Sorry.
Okay, there we go.
Isolation. Yeah, Infestation, I think, was a different game. It was Isolation.
Yeah, it's a top-down shooter.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll be back with all of that. So for Jason, Martin, Daniel, Anthony, and myself, this has been Dual Worlds in 2013 Game of the Year show.
All right.
Thank you.